Hi, welcome to the Career Refresh Podcast. I'm your host, Jill Griffin. I'm a former media and marketing executive turned career strategist and executive coach. I spent my career working my way up and through the ranks of global organizations and startups, and today I show others how to do the same. Join me each week as we discuss the strategies and actionable steps to leverage your strengths, increase your confidence, and develop your career well-being. Ready? Let's do it. Hey friends, welcome back to the Career Refresh Podcast. I'm your host, Jill Griffin. This week, I am introducing you to one of my longtime friends and industry colleagues, Sky Holden. He is currently the head of industry global business solutions at TikTok. So Sky has an extensive career, and you're going to really hear it, the authenticity in his voice. You're going to hear the trust, the kindness that oozes out of him. And this is some of the things that have really made Sky successful. He is a digital and media sales veteran, 20 years plus experience. And prior to joining TikTok, he led national and regional sales teams ranging both from early stage startups and multinational conglomerates, responsible for driving hundreds of millions of dollars in revenue for both Fortune 500 brands and agencies. And friends, he even worked at MySpaces, where he first called on me and we first met professionally 20 years ago. He has an extensive client Rolodex, and his experience spans the gamut from video, mobile, social, ad tech. In this episode, we cover the highlights of Sky's career journey and what he's learned along the way. We talk about in the early years how it was the seasoned employees that taught him strategic selling and really the basis of understanding how to be a great person in sales. We also talk about how finding and building diverse teams has enabled his team to up-level their output and really produce better work, the biggest challenges in finding talent in the marketplace, and how he manages team dynamics in a hybrid environment. We also talk about the importance of building a network early on in your career and how for today's workers who are coming into the industry for the first time, how they really want to think about making sure that they are building sustainable long-term relationships. And because you know me, I'm big on the mindset piece, how he developed his mindset muscle and what he learned from the art of the pause. Lastly, we round it up with what he looked for in a mentor and also what surprised him most about building a long-term and sustainable career. Friends, you're in for a treat. Again, you will find the kindness, the trust, and the authentic nature of Sky to really be the type of leaders we all want today. So dig in, give a listen. Any questions, as always, send them to hello@jillgriffincoaching.com. And I appreciate you all so much for being here, and I'll see you next time.
Hey, Sky, welcome.
Hi, Jill. Great to see you and hear you.
All right. I ask everyone who's a guest on my show to take me way back to the beginning and tell me what you wanted to be when you grew up.
It's wow. Okay. So I think it's interesting. I go way, way back. I really thought I wanted to actually work in the movie business.
Oh.
So my parents owned a movie theater growing up.
I did not know that. And I've known you forever. That's great.
Yeah, it was really interesting. It was probably when I was about maybe 8 to 10 years old, they opened up this single screen independent movie theater in a town across the river from Albany. And it was just really magical. It was magical going to the movie theater as a young child. Me and my brother, I have an identical twin brother. I just early memories are of sort of the wonder of film. They ended up actually opening up an even bigger theater in Albany that expanded to, over the years, 8 screens.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so it was a pretty big sort of cultural icon in Albany for decades. And for me and my brother, it was just a really powerful experience of being exposed to all of these great stories and these narratives. So for me, it was like, hey, I think I want to work in cinema and film. And the idea of making movies was really exciting. I think it was in college that I started exploring it a little more. And I actually realized how slow the process was of filmmaking. And I was like, I don't know if this is really for me. I think I was caught up in the magic and wonder of it, that's produced.
Yeah.
But I felt that, maybe I didn't have the patience or the attention span to sort of see that through of what it takes for the entire, movie making process.
Huh. Okay. Yeah. And we'll get into it so our listeners can know. I mean, you really worked on all sides of the table. I mean, you have worked for others. You have started your own company. You have worked for startups. And now you're at one of the top tech platforms out there. So take us through a little bit of your career journey.
Sure. I started out in tech before it was even called tech. Right. I distinctly remember in the last few months of undergrad going to, I think it was like a local pharmacy and flipping through, I believe it was like a science magazine. And it really said it was the World Wide Web is almost here and it's going to change the world. This is probably around 90, I would almost say 95 or 96.
Okay.
And I remember distinctly that moment. I was like, wow, I don't know what this means, but this is super exciting. Right. Now, mind you, when I was in college, I'm going to date myself, we had, internet relay chat, IRC. So we had these little terminals in the dorms where you could actually, you could email folks, but it wasn't visual. It was just like, it was just a prompt. I was like, for more games. You know,
and that
was it. And there were like maybe like Usenet groups that you could read stories on. But I remember that moment, like, was like, it's really interesting. I went to grad school down in Miami, and I came back to New York, and I worked briefly at a pharmaceutical agency for about 6 months, and I hated it. But I was determined to get myself into the tech business. Mm-hmm. I had the opportunity, I had an interview with an agency job. And then I also had an interview with an early tech company, a company called Real Networks that was at the time competing with Windows Media Player. It was a junior sales role and I had no idea or interest that sales was a path for me. I
think that's where we first met. That you and I first met when you were at Real Networks.
That was such a long time ago. I mean, we were selling pre-rolls before they were even called pre-rolls. We were like shipping beta SP tapes across the country. And I was like, let me tell you about streaming video. It's going to change the future. But I loved that role. I loved that start for me. Again, I didn't really see myself in sales. I always thought, my perception of sales is that it was a bit too slick and people were really trying to sell something that the buyers didn't really want.
I love that so many people think that about sales. And that's definitely can be true, right? But the idea that you're getting something because you're selling, like you're almost one-upping someone. Your consultative selling, like it's a completely different thing, but I do think that that's a misperception people have a lot about.
That is an absolute misperception. And I think I bought into it. I just, I remember early on, some of my colleagues would like be reciting lines from Glengarry Glen Ross, like coffee is for closers and put that coffee down. I was like, wait a second, like, is this real life? But I was really lucky if I step back and I look at those early years, I was really lucky to have been taught the right way to sell. My first boss in the industry, as well as my colleagues who were older than me, a lot of them came over from print. Mm. These were like the first guys coming over from print, from like Ziff Davis and all of that. And they were just amazing role models for me.
What are some of the things that they taught you, if you remember?
Authenticity. Being able to master a technical sale, being able to really talk about, delivering video over IP at the time, that was a really difficult thing, right? So how do you, they taught me, and what I really, really focused on my early years was to be a translator. How do I position myself as a translator to the buying community, my clients, who didn't really understand what was happening on the web? They knew everyone was going there. They had really no idea, like, what does this mean, right? And being able to position yourself as, I hate to say experts, but somebody who truly had a strong POV and could really help them understand what was happening. That was really sort of what helped me turn the corner of finding a career in sales, was realizing that, wait a second, I can be authentically myself. And what I really quickly learned is I just love connecting with people, right? And it's not about the sale. It's about the exchange of ideas and information.
Yeah.
And my goal is to clearly sell you something. I do that by establishing trust.
Right.
Right. And hey, look, here's what I'm seeing in the industry. Here's what's happening. And this is why I think it's important to you. So I knew I was on the right path when I would start going to lunches, or clients would call me and they would start asking me about, hey, what do you think about this? Not even my product. Hey, what do you think about this happening? I'm like, that's a really good question. Here's my thing. And I would always say, look, I only know so much, but from where I sit, I think these are a couple things that are going on in the industry.
That level of trust sort of puts you into both thought leadership and more trust.
Yes. And, I tell, spent about half my career as an individual seller, and the next half, actually more, I start counting the years, is in leadership. And what I continue to tell emerging talent in this industry is that, the sales process of why people make buying decisions is largely irrational. And it's all sort of framed as being a rational decision. But I think a lot of it is really based upon just core human behavior and traits. People buy from people that they like.
Yep.
And people that they trust.
Yep.
And you establish trust. I learned that you establish trust by being an expert on the industry and being a source of truth and knowledge that they can rely on. Because at the end of the day, it's not as if you are ever selling a scarcity product online. If you don't buy from me, it's not as if you're never going to be able to buy a banner in the early days or video or mobile, right? There's a lot of same, and as much as people say we're different here, different there. So if you take away the differentiation and say there's a lot of similar products out there, why are people making decisions to move forward with you? It's because they trust you.
Yeah.
It's because they understand that and they believe that if things go sideways, and invariably they will, it will happen. They trust you to make it right.
Yep.
And they trust you with their dollars to give them the results that they need to get them out of situations that are challenging, and fundamentally be a partner. So for me, I was very lucky early on to have, mentors and peers who sold the right way.
Yeah.
And didn't turn me off to an industry that is, that can be really tough. And a side of the business that people think like sales seems ridiculously hard. I'm just like, well, it's not easy, but if you really lean into your traits, and I quickly learned, obviously, as you know me, Jill, I'm extremely outgoing. I love connections. That's really my motivation, my fuel. It quickly became like, well, this is sort of a natural extension of who I am, to be partnering and building trust with people.
Yeah. And I think that's a really important point around the trust. And I think even in, you know, you and I have known each other, I don't know, 20 years.
Don't say the years. It's all right.
but I think it's really true where, you know, you build these relationships based on trust, and you might be at a different, you might be at a different media partner or a different vendor. I might be at a different brand or a different agency, but I trust you. And I know that you're going to give me the best opportunity to service the needs of what I'm looking for. You're also, to your point of technology can be wonky. Things can go down. Things can go wrong. The pixel could not be attached. We didn't get the right tracking. Like, I also know that you're in it with me. And I think that that is something extraordinary about your personal reputation and some of the other, what I'll say, old timers like you that have been in the digital space for quite some time, where it doesn't matter where you go, I trust you and I'm going to want to do business with you. And I think that that's an extraordinary thing that not everybody understands when they first get into the business, how important building that know, like, and trust factor is.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, so you learned from some of the best in your early stages from the publishing world. Then what happened?
I started to realize that if I wanted to make more money, I would need to move on, right? And I needed to sort of take the next steps to other solutions. And I did. That was hard at first, you know, feeling like, okay, now I have to start over again and again. I landed at MySpace, probably my third job. And it's funny, whenever I say MySpace today, everyone just laughs. No one can not, it's like people will not stop laughing, but I'm telling you.
But it also shows for you how you've been consistently an early adopter and taking, like being that wayfinder, like taking the step that some of us would be like, I don't know that that's the right thing. What if it doesn't work? What if it's not for me? And there you are at MySpace.
And I learned very early on is that you have to have a high risk profile and to have a durable career in this industry, meaning take risks and move on. I taught myself that I could move on, start over and have and experience the fears of, all right, got to learn a new product, got to learn a new book of business, create new relationships. Mm-hmm. But I developed a muscle that was like, you're going to be okay and you're going to thrive. Mm. And, you know, look, going to MySpace wasn't, I wouldn't say it was a massive risk, but it was a jump.
Yeah.
Right. It was an amazing jump. And, you know, they were just going through like a meteoric rise. And it absolutely increased my professional profile and I was able to have really high level like CMO conversations and so forth. And truly leaning into that translator. Hey, let me really explain to you what's happening. This is the dawn of social media, right? Here's how to build a brand presence. You know, here's what to watch out for and here's how to do it right. It was a great opportunity. It was pretty intense, but I really loved it and I learned a lot. I left MySpace because I wanted to start running teams and leading people. And, you know, I felt it was going to take longer than I had patience for, you know, at the time. So then I joined a small music site called iMeme. And, you know, I really embarked on my sort of leadership side of my career. And that was wonderful. You know, it has been, you know, it's been certainly not easy. Leading others, but I have just a strong affection for this craft of sales and mentoring and leading sales talent. You know, it started running regional teams, the national teams, larger than, you know, I moved into ad tech because that was a thing. You got to go into ad tech.
Got to know ad tech.
And all
the pipes.
Exactly. All about the pipes. And you know, it felt like things really sped up if I look back, right? It's just because the industry was expanding rapidly. The opportunities were expanding. And I felt like I hit my stride. I felt like I hit my stride on my professional reputation, as well as my enjoyment of leading teams. It was also really hard, right? It was also, you know, I found that the more senior roles I took on, I was moving further away from my true enjoyment of sales, which is direct client contact, interaction, and partnership. And my role was becoming much more internal facing, right? Forecasting, product focus and all that. You know, look, I am absolutely a left brain thinker. Is that more creative? Correct. Yep. tell me it's the other one. So like, you know, I've always really enjoyed sort of the concepts and not the details. Mm-hmm. Right. So, I love leading people and being a part of that process. When it came down to putting pen to paper on a lot of the fine print stuff, that was a stretch for me, and I had to really lean into that. But I did.
What do you think some of the biggest challenges were going from an IC, an independent contributor, into leadership?
I no longer had full control of my reality. when you're an individual contributor, you have your own book of business, you have a number, and you feel like, all right, I have my client base, I'm going to do this. And you feel like, look, there's always a level of tension in achieving numbers, but you feel like my output and my relationships will drive this forward. When you move into leadership, you don't have that control. You're trying to move teams and move people. You're creating
the capacity for others to do it.
Correct. And, you know, I quickly learned that I can't expect my team to operate exactly like me. So I needed to learn how do I get to the information that's several layers below without being a micromanager and without being a lunatic. You know, and that was something that I feel like I tried to balance a lot through the mid stages of my career, where I feel like in sales, especially in leadership, there's this sort of trope of just, you need to almost force your team and drag your team to a number, right? And just like by sheer grit and will, and you know what not said in there is intimidation, and sort of bad behavior of this, like, and that's never been who, like, part of just my identity and how I interact with folks. So I had to really find that balance of how do I push these folks and how do I inspire them? I just feel that people operate at their best when they feel safe and protected, and supported. Mm-hmm. You know, I think just because of the way this industry has grown and largely my experiences have been with, you know, early stage startups, it's just like, hey, we need revenue for revenue's sake. Go, go, go. Yeah. You know, and I think that at times has been sort of counter to my approach as more of an empathetic leader.
So as a senior leader, you know, you've moved from an independent contributor into now leadership. What have you seen as some of the most significant challenges in finding talent, especially as we're, you know, every company has a different structure, every office has a different structure within the working from home, being in the office, being remote. What are you finding as some of the most significant challenges with finding talent?
Number one is really competitive. Right. It's an incredibly competitive market. And I've seen the change in candidates in a lack of an appetite for a high risk early stage opportunity. Right. I think folks want a little bit more security mm-hmm. you know, where it feels like the industry has changed significantly over the last 5 to 6 years, where it felt like there were so many opportunities in so many different sectors. But when you talk about the duopoly, which is or now triopoly, and the impact of the big three on the ad tech industry, where I think the last stat was 80 to 90% of every ad dollars are going to these, you know, top three platforms. So therefore the rest, you're essentially fighting for 10 to 20%. Mm. Right. And what you saw was a real collapse in the ad tech industry, and a lot of other early stage startups that were really fun early on in my career, that you could get folks, you know, on board because you had a really very real opportunity for them to grow their career and make money. Mm. I feel that has changed, and I think folks really are rightfully looking for a bit more stability and certainty. So,
I read that as a translation to the competition is twofold. One, working for a top platform, you're selective. Two, the market, based on where we've been over the last 2 years, you know, coming into the pandemic and now, as we say, post-pandemic, the market, the choice and the power that employees have had over the last 2 years that they have never had before kind of makes it double sword of competitiveness. And then what I also hear you saying is that employees having, you know, when they're prospecting, having choice, what it also means is paying someone at a very low salary for the potential payout, right? The future value of money through options and the like. It's an amazing thing to do when you're super young, but you can't buy a mortgage when you don't actually have the cash in hand. You can't pay the rent. You can't, you know, maybe afford some of the other things that you want in your life if your base level is so low, but you have a huge upside. That's what I hear.
Correct. Absolutely. And I think because the opportunities have shrunk, the universe of opportunities has become smaller, and there has been an absolute push for sales talent to move into the larger platforms, and the pay structure is not as rich as they are for early startups. It's not easy at times attracting talent. You know, so it's also when you're part of a larger company, it's less of my own personal recruiting. Right. You have to go through an entire process of multiple interviews, panels, and so forth. So, I think in many ways it's a very smart process of making sure that candidates are fully vetted, and going through a process and making sure, you're not hiring out of bias. Right. So I think that fundamentally is good, but I do think, you no longer have the ability to say, hey, I want you here. We can refer people, and you can say, hey, I'd love for you to go through this process, but it's no longer the influence I have, is less. I just try to bring people in that I see are talented,
right?
And hey, go through the process and good luck. Good luck to you. Right. Hope to see you on the other side.
Yeah. So it ends up almost like, you know, creating, as you say, a place of like a lot of the unconscious bias gets pushed away because there's a panel and there's multiple people that are going to have a weigh in on the decision,
correct,
who the next talent is. Okay. Right.
Correct. Now, but look, what I've seen, especially at my current role, is it's easily the most diverse company I've been a part of. And when I say diversity, it's just of backgrounds of thought, of approaches. And I think it's just created a really powerful and dynamic work environment that I think, you know, we hadn't had in our industry and is incredibly important. So I'm all about it.
Incredibly inspiring. Great. Yeah.
It's inspiring. It's just necessary. I think we put out better work. I know we put out better work.
Yeah.
You know, when you're just truly representative of what's out there in the world.
Right. So diversity of thought as much as diversity of
absolutely
from all different cultures, et cetera. Okay. Yeah. So then when you think about some of the challenges with managing team dynamics in a hybrid environment, what are you seeing?
There is, you know, clearly we've blown up and destroyed the myth that you have to be in the office 5 days a week, you know, 8:30 until 6 or 7 in order to be effective.
Well, and as a seller, you probably weren't in there anyway because you were out meeting clients.
Sure. Yes. But there was also the expectation, like working from home was considered to be like, why are you working from home? Unless you're sick, you have to be in the office.
Okay.
Right. That's the expectation.
Sure.
It was a rite of passage. And just like, hey, we're all here. We're all here. We're doing this together. And, you know, I think as a society, we realized that like, hey, people can be effective from home. And I think what it's really taken is a very nuanced approach is you have to allow people the flexibility. Right. And I think it's very healthy. I think it's good. You know, we're in a hybrid approach right now. We're in 3 days a week and it's working. I think, you know, my approach is this is, I don't want anything to feel like I'm taking attendance. Yeah. You know, I think it's important that we have a culture.
Sky the hall monitor.
that is, I'm certainly not going to do it. And as a company, we're not doing that. You know, to me, it's, I want to make sure that people feel that when they're in the office, it's because they're there because they get the most connection with their colleagues and they get the most, the best output. They're inspired by others and learning from others. And I think we've done a really good job of that. I mean, personally, it's been great for me to be back in the office, just have, you know, rituals of getting out of the house. You know, I think the other part of it is for the younger generation in their first or second job, I really feel for them. Not having the early years to where I would rely on folks who were in my same position. We didn't know what the hell we were doing.
They helped raise each other.
We did it together.
Like, don't do it that way. Do it this way.
It this way. All of
right.
that.
Or you're crazy and, or go after it. Right. You had that, that mirroring from people who were in a similar boat from you that we can also root for each other. And then also I think the camaraderie where, you know, you and I are working late. We've got a lot to get done. It's the velocity of digital in the industry. And we're going to go out for a beverage after work before we go home. And we're continuing to like build relationships that, you know, I think for me personally sustained me throughout COVID because I had lots of people to tap into and call and talk to, even if it was on Zoom, right? Even if we're having a video conversation. But suddenly you have all of these connections. That's amazing.
And I also think it's you've taken a couple years of folks who've started their careers on a screen.
Right.
And now coming to an office is like very different.
Yeah.
Right. And I think it's at least for you and I coming back as like, oh, I've done this before. I want, like, I know what we can aspire to go back to or even a little different. Right. But, I really feel for young professionals because I think there's absolutely been, it's been a really challenging couple of years for all of us, but I think starting out your career, remotely or, you know, missing your senior year in, you know, in college and then having your first 2 years be remote, that is really tough. So I think we owe it to that generation to sort of, you know, connect them to what it means to be in an office and what it means to be building those, to me, lifelong relationships. Absolutely. Right? You and I met early on.
Yep.
Right? And we're still connected. And it's a glorious thing. I just think it often gets, you know, the work from home debate often is entirely too tactical. Well, it's easier if I'm home. Well, it's, you know, cost me more money to go into the office. I was like, guys, you're really missing the point. But at the end of the day, as a manager, what I've learned is like, look, I need to be much more responsive to my team's needs, right? Is, hey, I can't come in today because my kid's sick, you know, and there's no one else to do it, you know, or, hey, I have this going on. Like there's other life things that are happening that I think, I think we've learned a lot more empathy, and understanding, you know, if you talk about anything positive that, that comes out of the last couple of years is I think we've, we're no longer as narrowly focused on this is the only way to be successful and you have to do it this way, which is great. No,
I agree. I mean, I've seen a tremendous, I mean, I talk about career well-being, a lot, and I've seen a tremendous interest in people saying like, you can still have that, I don't really know that it's a balance, but you find your own way within that balance of what works for you at the same time, still be wildly successful at your job. So having that, as
absolutely.
Yeah.
Yes.
All right. So I want to take a little bit of a pivot and get to know more about your, you know, your approach. I mean, you and I have had many conversations about mindset over the years and how you have really shown so many people like how mindset has been such a part of your own personal life and, you know, in achieving your accomplishments and also, you know, how you use in your personal life. Tell a little bit about like, what's your process? Like, how do you tap into your gut instinct and know like what's the right next action to take on a particular challenge professionally?
That's a great question. So I think like for me, what's been really interesting is developing a daily habit. You know, I meditate every day. Mm. You know, it's something that took me a while to embrace. Mm-hmm. But it is, I've learned how to sort of settle my mind and get it pointed in the right direction, or just to sort of right sides whatever issues and anxiety may be happening at the time. It also just is a really important way for me to start the day. It's something that's now become like, this is what I do. Yeah. You know, I journal, I need to journal more, but that is helpful in just writing things down. Again, like for me, it is when I, from a mindset standpoint, when I express myself, and that is through writing, through talking to others, or even in meditating is an expression. I'm just tapping more into myself. What is bothering me, what I'm anxious about, becomes right sized. It just becomes a lot smaller. So I've learned to develop that muscle. Mm-hmm. And you know, for me, it is, you know, understanding that you can define your reality by how you think and how you have your mind wrapped around challenges, and opportunities. Mm. And I think, you know, earlier on, I would spin out around things that I felt were out of my control or things that were happening to me. Because I feel I didn't have any agency. But I've been pretty amazed in the last number of years to be able to sit with an issue and not react. I think that's probably one of the biggest things. I've actually learned that I'm not going to say anything right now. I'm going to put that to the side.
Right.
And I'm going to think about it.
Respond and not react is yes. a huge victory.
If I'm reacting, I'm a lunatic. Right. I'm just like, it's emotion that's driving me.
Right.
And could be fear and anger as opposed to, all right, let me just, this is troubling or this is a challenge.
Yeah.
Let me just sit on this and let me understand why I'm feeling a certain way. And then really what, and when I come back to it, what seems to be like an issue, is much smaller. I'll never forget, one of my really good friends and mentors, when I was at my first job, in this industry, I had a client who was a complete like lunatic and just like was not an easy client, right? There was just and they had this scathing email, and I wrote a point by point response. Boom, 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 boom.
Did you write line? Did you write it like in line, or did you
I probably like, I think I would in line. I think I wrote them an actual letter. I think I actually prepared a telegram. I was like, I am going to tell
you're committed. You were committed.
I was like, yes, got him, nailed him. So I showed it to him, and he's like, oh, okay. He's like, maybe you'll wait until tomorrow to send that. I was like, no, man, this is great. Right. This is like, I got him. And I was like, I think you should wait till tomorrow. And, you know, obviously I did. And I was like, all right, well, I'm not sending that.
Right. Right.
And it was just, you know, it was just his, you know, his wisdom and experience was just like, yeah, I hear you. You're right. Yeah,
patience in the pause.
Yeah. And just, you know, like I just used to be a bit of a motor mouth, you know, I used to just, you know, if you give me space to talk, I'm going to talk and go. And I certainly clearly have no issue, you know, talking today, but I think I've learned in the art of the pause and the art of just like, all right, I'm going to take that all in.
Yeah.
And I'll respond to that when I'm ready.
Awesome. Awesome. You mentioned mentor. And when we think about, you know, young professionals today, not necessarily having some of the same privileges that we had about building relationships in the same way, what would you recommend for someone who's looking for a mentor? What did you look for?
I look for people who I admired for how relatable, upfront and honest they were. There are people who, when I said, hey, 10 years from now, 15, 20 years from now, or is this somebody whose characteristics I would like to emulate?
Mm.
Right. So for me, it was folks who were smart, kind, dynamic, trustworthy, inspiring. Right. I looked for that. I was like, okay, I like that. I can align with those values because that's what's important to me. Because again, it took me probably a good, I'd say maybe 5 to 6 years to fully embrace the sales path for me.
Right.
You know,
right.
To feel like, all right, hey, is this really for me?
What you're doing.
And I realized that, wait, I can be authentically myself. And be successful.
Yeah.
So I, you know, it was through those mentors that I was like, oh, you don't have to be a lunatic as a sales leader.
Right.
To inspire folks.
Yeah.
Right. You know, you don't have to, be hyper aggressive or be untrustworthy and scare the crap out of your teams in order to produce the results. Cause sure, that will work short term.
Yeah, well, that's right. Power over versus power with, right?
It's exactly
not going to last. So, if someone is looking for a mentor, would you approach it by just sort of doing it casually? Would you do it formally? Like, what worked for you?
I think for me, it was casual.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have always been outgoing and it's easy for me to talk to people. And I realize that is, not everyone is like that. And that's why I'm in this career. And that's why, you know, I attribute to a good part of my success. But I think getting to know people authentically and naturally, can then lead into a more formal mentor mentee and having that I think if you don't know anyone and someone says, hey, can you be my mentor? I just feel it's like, it's a bit transactional. But that's just like, just from what has worked for me. I've had some great encounters with folks who are just starting their careers, and, it's been an honor when folks are looking for guidance and inspiration and all that. I just, you know, I immediately brings me back to when I started. Yeah. Right. So part of it for me is like, hey, how do I pay it forward? I had folks who really stood up for me and showed up. And it's also just fun. I'm excited when folks are driven and want to make a career out of this, and care. You know, that's the biggest thing is like, I connect with folks who really care, who care, who take themselves seriously and take their job seriously and take each other seriously. You know, so when I see that, and when I say seriously, I also, you know, please don't take yourself too seriously. Right. But just like
there's lots of laughs along the way. Yeah.
Yeah. You should be laughing. We should be having fun. Like, this is what makes work interesting. But folks who, when you could tell that they're serious about their careers, they're trying to find their way, mm-hmm. and they're looking for, you know, for guidance, for folks to say, hey, I'd love for you to be part of this journey. It's an honor. Absolute honor. Mm.
I love that. Okay. All right. So one last question. What are you reading right now? Or what have you recently read that you would recommend as a good read to the listeners?
I just recently started reading Radical Candor.
Ah.
Yeah. And it's really, really interesting. Because it actually aligns with a lot of how I sort of see the business world and the leadership experience. I think I heard of the book, right? And I was like, all right, well, it sounds like by the title that you just have to, I'm just going to be extremely honest with you, Jill, and you're fucking up. And but when I started reading it, I was like, no, wait a second. It's like, the best thing you can do as a leader, and the most caring thing you can do is to be direct, with somebody, but still be supportive to then bring them along that journey. Mm-hmm. I would say without a doubt earlier in my career, being conflict avoidant and always feeling bad about, having tough news for folks, felt really hard, felt really, really difficult. But I learned, and I'm still learning, is that, you know, I've had folks when I was very direct, you know, thank me. All right. Thank you for being very honest. Mm. It's important that I know where I stand and what I need to work on. Mm. And there's, to me, I'm still reading the book. What it's teaching me is that you can be authentic and kind and supportive and still deliver very direct information and news, right? It's not an either or, it's an and.
Right.
Right. And there's ways that you can craft your own personal style and authenticity to it. So it's been really, really interesting. Look, I also think, I had a friend who told me this, is that ever since COVID, they've had trouble actually reading books for some reason. And I feel a little bit of that. I read a lot of news. I need to get more back into books. I've started reading a couple novels, fiction, which are interesting because that's a nice little, very transportive. I'm actually halfway through The Beach as well, which is actually really, really, really fun. But you know, Radical Candor it's a very interesting, book, and it was actually gifted to me by someone I work with. It was incredibly thoughtful.
Huh, I love that. Well, I also think it really sums up who you are, is basically what you said, right? Authentic, kind, and wildly successful. You can still be it all. Okay, so I lied. There's one final question. I want to know, what is the most surprising thing you learned about your own ability throughout your career?
I feel really lucky. Mm. You know, I feel incredibly lucky to have made a career in this industry, developed and fostered, you know, decades long relationships with people. I mean, we've known each other for 20 years.
Yeah.
There's folks who, you know, we've seen each other, you know, get married, have kids, go through divorces, go through career challenges and changes and everything. It's just the amount of pride I feel, and just feeling lucky that I've I've been a part of this, of this journey. I feel proud of this, industry and had a role in it. And just these really great relationships. And that's why even today, the folks who I'm working with, I'm working for, people on my team, I just feel I'm excited for them. Right. I also just feel lucky and honored to be on the journey with them. I think, like, you know, at this stage in my career, I'm just like, look, like, this is a moment in time.
Yeah.
Right. And like, how do we really like to savor that? I mean, it's, look, it's hard. We're working, you know, very hard. We all are. But you know, the connections in this journey, I always feel like you never really, when I look back at past jobs, I, without a doubt, don't really remember the sales, meaning, hey, we sold this. But I remember the partnerships. I remember the connections. I remember the connections. I remember the travels and the laughs and the struggles and the tears and all that.
Sure.
This is a little dramatic, but I just, it's, so I'm really, I am surprised at, you know, being able to build a long-term and sustainable career, that for me has been fundamentally rooted in connection, right? I think I always thought that work was sort of a separate thing, right? You do it because you have to do it. I think for me, it was, the switch was, wait, this is, I can be authentically myself and build really great connections with people. And that can be a real sort of superpower, and that can be supercharged, my journey in this. And so being able to like sit back and look at that, and I still have, you know, knock on wood, you know, many years ahead of me, of growth and learning, but it's just, feel lucky and very humble.
I think that is a perfect place to end our conversation today, of just feeling lucky and feeling like the connections that we made is really why we're here. Sure, we're going to make some money along the way. We're going to have some fun and have some success and inspiration and accomplishments, but it's the connections. So I love that. Well, Sky, thank you so much for being here. I really appreciate you taking the time out of, I know that you are busy these days, so I appreciate that you're taking the time to be on the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Hey, thanks for listening to the Career Refresh Podcast. If you're enjoying this and you want more information, go to my website, jillgriffincoaching.com. There you can find information on how to work with me one-on-one or my group programs, or even bring me into your workplace. I'll put the link to my website in the show notes. But hey, listen, before you go, do me a favor. Rate and review this podcast, because it definitely helps me get the word out to people everywhere so that they can also thrive in the workplace. All right, friends, I appreciate you. I'll see you soon.